Next Chapter Podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is not what I was expecting from the band Los Lobos.
Well, don't worry, baby. What the world is bringing. Well, don't worry, baby. It won't take.
I mean, this is like incredible blues. It's Don't Worry, Baby by Los Lobos off of their 1984 album, How Will the Wolf Survive? It's also number 455 out of 500 on the Spotify original, The 500, with me, Josh Adam Myers, a.k.a. the King of Fleece. What's up, Fleece Army? If you haven't gotten a ranking yet in the Fleece Army, because I've been doing that on social media, people like hit me up and I'm like, you're a captain, you're a general. Hit me up on Soch. Let me know that you're listening to the 500 and you're a part of the Fleece Army, and I will give you your ranking. Because when you're in the Fleece Army, you're joining me on this journey through Rolling Stone magazine's list of the 500 greatest albums of all time. And I mean it, man. This is the greatest recorded music in the history of the world. So get your ranking. Football has started, so I know it's difficult sometimes to listen to these records. But do it. Why? When you're watching your team shit the bed and you're losing the house on the bet that you made on sportsbookie.com, you know, put this soundtrack on. Let it play in the background. It's fine. September 27th, guys, we're doing a live 500 recording at Just for Laughs, Toronto. I'll be in Toronto. I'm so excited. I've never been there before. But come and join me, man. Tickets are at my website at www.joshadammyers.com. There's the link that'll take you to the Just for Laughs page, or just go to hahaha.com and you can get tickets. JFL Montreal was so much fun. They're having me back because it's only getting bigger because of all of you guys doing the Instagram stories. You didn't think I was going to promote this week, but I did. Instagram stories, guys, take a screenshot of how you're listening to the 500 and tag me at Josh Adam Myers and put a hashtag the 500 podcast, because we are trying to get the word out, and I know my Fleece Army knows people. Give us that 24-hour ad on your social media, and I will love you forever. Now, like I said at the beginning, I didn't know what to expect from this record. I didn't know much about Los Lobos, so here we go. Released in October of 1984 and produced by T-Bone Burnett and Steve Berlin, How Will the Wolf Survive is the second full-length album by the Chicano rock group Los Lobos, who, on their first album, modestly referred to themselves as just another band from East LA. The roots of Los Lobos began in East Los Angeles in 1973 by Garfield High School student, vocalist guitarist Cesar Rosas, and his slightly older neighbor vocalist and multi-instrumentalist Francisco Frank Gonzalez, who was interested in Mexican folk music. They were soon joined by drummer multi-instrumentalist Luis Perez, guitarist vocalist David Hidalgo, and bassist Conrad Lozano, all former students of Garfield High as well. They founded the group as Los Lobos del Este de Los Angeles, the Wolves of East Los Angeles. Although they had all played in top 40 cover bands, they wanted this band to reflect the heritage of their Mexican folk roots. For authenticity, they all learned to play additional traditional Mexican instruments. I can't believe Morty would put those two words together in this thing. Why would you put additional traditional? Do you understand how hard that was, people, for me to say? After an argument, Gonzalez left the band in 1976. Why? Why would he leave? A year later, in 1977, Los Lobos del Este recorded their debut album as an acoustic folk group and gained some popularity within their community. However, after playing with a lot of other local punk-influenced bands like X, Circle Jerks, and especially The Blasters, they wanted to get heavier and reach larger audiences. So they mixed their traditional Mexican music with Zydeco, R&B, soul, Tex-Mex, folk, country, and rock and roll. The EP that followed in 1983, titled And a Time to Dance, saw them shorten their name, partner up with producers T-Bone Burnett and former Blasters member Steve Berlin, record a cover of the Richie Valens hit Come On, Let's Go, and eventually, this is really cool, eventually win the first Grammy Award for Best Mexican-American Performance for the song Anselma. That's awesome. Besides being a critical success, it allowed them to buy a Dodge van and tour the U.S. for the first time. They returned to the studio in the summer of 1984 to record their major label debut for Warner Brothers Records. Once again, produced by T-Bone and Steve Berlin, who had previously played woodwinds on their EP, they officially added Steve as a member on this album. The white and Jewish Berlin was the only non-Latino in the band. Can you imagine what that would have been like? Hey, guys, I can't play next week. It's Purim. What the fuck is Purim, Holmes? I mean, I don't even really know what it is. I just know I got to go to shul. What the fuck is shul, man? What is that circle on your head? I don't know why. What is that, a yarmulke? What the fuck is a yarmulke? Is that racist? I can say it. I'm Jewish. The album was another critical success. Though it only peaked at number 47 on the Billboard charts, it stayed on for 34 weeks and cemented their popularity. A few years later, they would record more Richie Valens songs for the 1987 biopic movie La Bamba, whose title track would go on to go to number one and make them popular worldwide. Well, they deserve it, because this is a great record. And I've got a great guest whose popularity is going to hit worldwide popularity. My friend, Frankie Quinones, a great stand-up comedian, but man, his character work is top-notch. One of my personal favorites is Cholo Fit, where he plays the character Creeper, and he teaches other cholos how to work out. It is extremely funny, and you can see it on his social media. Maybe you've seen him in the Dress Up Gang, which premiered at Sundance. Maybe you've heard his voice on Victor and Valentino on Cartoon Network. I've been looking for an album to sit down and talk to him with, and when I saw this one pop up, I threw the Hail Mary hoping he was a fan of Los Lobos, and the dude was like, dude, I love that band. So I was like, yes. Rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to The 500 and listen free on Spotify or anywhere you get your podcast, but listen to it on Spotify. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. Email the podcast at 500podcast@gmail.com to tell us if we're doing a good job and tell us if you don't like my opinion or you love my opinion. And for all things 500, guys, go to the website, the500podcast.com. Well, now that I've gotten through all the mishmash, nothing left to say but here we go with number 455 out of 5, honey, with How Will the Wolf Survive by Los Lobos. Frankie Quinones, bound down, 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 Frankie Quinones, down, 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 down. Thanks for not jumping in on that, dude. I feel like such an idiot every time I do that. So I asked you to do this because I'm a huge fan of yours, but you said you were a fan of Los Lobos. Like,
oh yeah,
how did that start? Like,
to be honest, I mean, there's obviously a famous movie called La Bamba. That,
that's how I knew him.
Oh, really? Okay,
dude,
perfect. Yeah,
everybody knew La Bamba. Everybody when that came out, Lou Diamond Phillips. Come on.
Yeah, well, you know, some of my family members knew about him before, and I guess, you know, because they're from East L.A., but what do you call it? You know, obviously when La Bamba came out, a lot of people fell in love with that from every background, stuff like that. But that's when I first saw, you know, when you saw Richie get the inspiration and when he was in TJ, and then you saw Los Lobos playing on stage. And then I was like, who are these guys? He looked them up, and they had already been putting music out, you know, like since – I don't know. I think before the 80s.
This came out in 84.
Yeah, so that came out.
This is their second record.
Yeah, I was probably, you know, I was thinking I was already like 3 or 4 years old at that time. So obviously, I didn't know who they were until La Bamba came out. And then I started just going through kind of all their music, and my parents were into them already, and so I kind of started digging in there. That's why when you sent me this album, I was like, I don't know if I'm familiar with that, but then I saw the album cover, and then I had flashbacks of it, my dad having the audio cassette of it, and
nice.
I was like, oh, I was like, okay.
Because I got worried when I sent it to you, and I was like, have you listened to How Will the Wolf Survive? And you were like, huh? And I was like, fuck. I was like, well, hopefully he listens to this shit.
I just forgot that that was the name of it, but when I saw the album cover, I was like, oh, that one. All right, cool.
So you grew up with this in your household.
Oh, yeah,
Are you from Los Angeles?
Yeah, yeah. I was born in L.A. in San Fernando.
In the San Fernando Valley?
And then I mostly grew up in Ventura County, which is like an hour north. We moved there when I was young. And then I moved to, you know, San Francisco, San Pancho, we call it. And then I lived there for like 18 years, but now I've been back here for 6 years.
Okay. So is a band like Los Lobos, like, are they respected in like the Latin music community? I mean,
yeah, I mean, for sure, man. I would say for sure. There was, I mean, just based off people I was around, I wouldn't say, even for myself, like when you saw them do, because we fell in love with them because of the La Bamba thing and then the playing, you know, singing in Spanish and stuff like that. And then you saw him do kind of like the rock thing, and it's like, oh, wait, what are they doing here? Like, and then so I think there was a little bit of like, oh, these fools selling out or da-da-da. But I was like, nah, man, they're just rocking out, dude. And then you started listening to it, and then you appreciated it more and more because it was just because it was a lot of, for me, it was like the first time I saw that, like an all Latino group.
Yeah.
That also sang like corridos and cumbias, but singing like folk music.
So our album is number 455 out of 500. It's the second studio album, How Will the Wolf Survive by Los Lobos, released October 1984. Produced, and this is something that really shocked me, produced by Steve Berlin, who I didn't know, but this one I knew, T-Bone Burnett. Do you know who T-Bone Burnett is? T-Bone Burnett is one of the most acclaimed movie soundtrack producers like ever. The guy, listen, I'm looking at it right now, he did all the Coen Brothers movies. So he did, the big one was Oh Brother Where Art Thou, Big Lebowski, Cold Mountain, Divine Secrets of the Ya-Ya Sisterhood, my favorite movie, and Crazy Heart, just a whole bunch of shit. And then he's worked, Adam, my producer, said he's been out recording. I knew he went solo, or he did solo stuff, but just, and I think that's kind of what I heard, because as I was listening to this record, I was like, man, this sounds so well produced. Like even when it transitions from blues into corrado, was it corrado?
Corridos.
Yeah. How white do I fucking sound?
Corrado? Was it a corrado you transferred to?
Goddamn corrados. The fuck they
don't worry,
sing.
Man. My Spanish ain't perfect either, but yeah.
Yeah, but you can roll that N really good.
Oh, yeah,
that,
corridos. Oh, yeah.
Or roll the R. There it is, dude. I can do that shit. Fucking, I've lived here 12 years in Los Angeles, but I had no idea. Like, I think that's fucking incredible. And then, like, this is a legit record. Rolling Stone magazine ranked this album number 30 in the 100 best albums of the 80s, which just blew my mind.
Wow, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, so like...
I just knew it was on the 500 when you sent it, and then I didn't know it was top 30 in the 80s. Wow.
So top 30 for 100 best records of the 80s. I wonder what was before and what's after that, too. But either way, it's like, this was really, for me, an enjoyable experience. For you, listening to it now, like, how did it, you know, resonate with you?
Yeah, man. I'm so glad that you sent it, because once I recognized the album cover, I was like, oh, man, my dad had this on audio cassette. And then, you know, re-listening to it, I'm like, I definitely would appreciate it more now than I guess I did back then. I probably scrolled through some songs back then or fast-forwarded it.
Whatever. Yeah.
But, yeah, man, it's just diverse. It's so much variety in it.
Yeah.
And it just appreciated me. Like, you know, myself and my parents were both born here in the LA and LA area,
your parents are they first generation Americans
so my grandfather is from my dad's side is from Mexico, you know, and then my mom is part Mexican Native American, though like her uncle is you know, just became chief of our tribe like last October, but our reservation is right on the other side of the fence for now, and might be a wall, hopefully not, but of Juarez, Mexico, which is in El Paso, Texas. So there's an Isleta Pueblo. So everybody's kind of, it's like a Mexican tribe pretty much. You know, they do, some people speak the dialect, but a lot of people speak Spanish and stuff like that. So, you know, but growing up in America, so.
All right, let's dive into the record. Let's go into the first track. All right, so first song... Don't Worry Baby. Play the intro for a second. How will the wolf survive? Let me tell you guys. By a bunch of Mexicans playing rhythm and blues. That is how the wolf is going to expire. This song is incredible. Not only is it great rhythm and blues, but it shows you how good these guitarists are. So
they were the first ones to be like, yeah, fuck it. We're a Latino band. We're from Eastside, but we get, you know, this is what we do. And so it's kind of like, it was encouraging, you know? It's like, just be yourself, man. You don't got to worry about being too much of this or too much of that.
If you want to play fucking rhythm and blues and Johnny Lee Hooker-style blues, you know, guitar, fucking do it.
Yeah, exactly. You can still be Chicano as fuck and fucking play some blues, man.
No, this is great. All right, so this song is about not letting life get you down. So I've known you probably for about 2 or 3 years now. Mm-hmm. Every time I see you, you're one of the happiest guys. You just have this really positive energy. Also, you're around very positive people. How do you stay positive in such a negative profession?
Right. I mean, for me, man, it's like, you know, obviously depression and anxiety is a motherfucker. But the times that I'm most happy is when I'm around people, especially around my peers, too. And like, we all share that common ground and we're trying to go on stage and make people feel good or laugh or whatever it is. But I would say that's when I thrive personality-wise the most, when I'm around people, because I'm just like, yes, you know, energies and we're all going through shit and da-da-da. But my mom and dad they're probably the biggest influence as far as positivity, because when I was little, we lived in a one-bedroom apartment, but they were always so positive.
Yeah.
So, like, the whole, like, we don't have that much, we don't have money part, it didn't really... Because they were just like, no, but there's positivity and love.
Because we're together.
Music was a big thing. Like, they were like, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire, Maze, Frankie Beverly, Brass Construction, you know, Los Lobos, Santana, fucking, you know, Chicago. There was always music and humor on. And so, and then I saw them grow, and then they achieve all their goals, and positivity was like their religion, and music and humor was like the forefront of that.
You know what's funny is that most people that I know that come from homes that are just maybe a little bit tighter with money, you know, I don't want to say struggling, but just definitely like the father and the mother work, and mom's taking care of kids, and it's just like, you know, I want to buy this, and they're like, no, we can't have that because we can't afford that. Those are some of the happiest families because they just come up with ideas and just things that are free or whatever, and just being together. It's just, there's some of the most positive people I met, and then also some of the richest people I've met are the most negative motherfuckers. I got cousins from Long Island that have so much money, and all of them have been in therapy since they were like two.
Oh, fuck, dude.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like, I just don't think
God bless your cousins up there listening, right?
But you mentioned something that struck me. Oh, he's not listening to this. Jared, are you listening to this? Jared, Lindsay, Zuflack, are you listening? Bobby, are you listening? Michelle, any of you, give me a sign. Watch, I'm just like, I don't get invited to like their kid's bar mitzvah. I'm like, what happened? Oh, really? You know. Remember Los Lobos? I'm like, Jesus.
Remember the Carretos? Yeah.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
But you mentioned something else. You said depression and anxiety. So, like, you know,
depression is something that I constantly battle. It's like, have you had like a low point in your career where it was really at its peak?
For sure.
When was that?
I mean, that's probably, I don't know, maybe about a year and a half ago, a couple years ago or something like that. Yeah. It was when things kind of started happening
in your career.
Quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, not that I'm like this huge thing, but, you know, you go from bussing tables and delivering sandwiches, and the next thing you know, it's like, oh, I got this much in the bank from doing this. And then all of a sudden everything, you know, and then you just feel the pressures, and then things are pulling at you, and then you feel kind of overwhelmed, and then you don't feel like you have the right to complain to anybody about it. Like, why am I feeling this way? Why am I should be happy, you know? And then you're like, well, fuck. And, you know, and then you just start having those thoughts, man. My mind does a good place of taking itself to a dark place right away, which I think we could all relate to.
Like, oh, yeah.
You know, one minute you're like, hey, no, things are good. Then I'm sitting in a room by myself and I'm like, it would be so easy to leave right now, right?
Say, yeah, you don't want to be. You're just like, maybe I should put on Storage Wars or something to cheer me up. Oh, I've been there. Oh, I know, man. It's always when you're at, it's always, because what happens is, I think, was when you finally start getting everything you want and you still feel the anxiety of just, because it's just being alive. Like, everybody suffers from anxiety, and depression is just, you know, was the depression coming from you looking at where you're at, but then still seeing where other people were at and being like, well, I'm not up there? Or is it just,
not that.
Anxiety, like, I get.
It's never... I've kind of like at first, maybe in my first couple years of doing comedy, it was like, you want to go in, I want to be the funniest person on the lineup, da da da. But then when I felt like I started getting better, when I was like, nah, man, it's not about that. It's just like, we're all, you know, you start thinking about the whole one life to live thing and fucking da da da. And then it was just like, it's about all of us together and da da da. So I don't look at other comics and try to compete with them at all. I just like trying to do my own thing. But when you reach those points of like, oh man, you know, you picture these things in your head and then you go for it. Like work-wise and putting the work in, and then once you get it, and then you're supposed, you know, you feel like you're supposed to be happy, and then you're not happy. I think that just feeds into more like into the depression. Like, wait, but I'm supposed to be happy. Why not? And then you just fucking, you know, get dark as fuck and da da da. But I don't know, man. I'm just getting wordy now and not explaining it right.
No, you're explaining it perfectly, dude.
But
how did you come out of that situation when all the people are pulling at you? And you're in that dark place after getting the success and quitting your jobs. Like, how did you come out of that?
Yeah, I would say, and you know, I could be fucking back to rock bottom next year. I don't know.
You're not.
But,
don't worry. But you're not. Trust me, dude. You're hysterical. You're.
But yeah, I think it was.
You're
just,
like, what if you were like, you don't know about my crippling gambling addiction? Yeah. I'm betting on the horchata. Like, what? You bet on drinks? We do sometimes. It's weird.
But horchatas, micheladas. Is he going to get the horchata or michelada? I got 20 on it.
Oh, shit. Weprito. What does that get me? It's even. Oh, thank God. Give me my money back.
But, I was thinking of just learning to harness it, you know? Like, be like, hey, man, this is what it is, and da-da-da. And instead of, like, beating myself up over the small... my mind's always looking for the next thing to beat itself up over. Mm-hmm. And then just, you know, laying off the booze and the drugs and, you know, kind of meditating and all that shit.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And more just, me and my family have always been so tight, but making more of an effort of that, you know, getting on the phone with them and da-da-da. And you know, both my parents are still around. You know, my grandfather still lives, you know, half an hour away from me, and he's 91, still mows his own lawn. I'll go kick it with him and then... kind of just focus on the relationships, because I know not everybody has that, you know.
Yeah.
Like I said, we started from nothing, but now my mom and dad are doing well, you know. But when we started in that one part, I know not everybody has that. If you're living in a low income situation and you're living with a single parent and you have all these other things to deal with, so I just focus on the positive. Like, yeah, man, fuck, we came from this, but look.
Yeah. All right. So cool thing about this song, this was used in the 1985 John Hughes teen comedy Weird Science. I had no idea about that. Did you know that? During the scene where the mob of people show up and rush into the big party.
Holy shit.
That's fucking nuts. I had no idea. All right, that goes into A Matter of Time. Now, I think this one is one of the centerpieces of the record. It's upbeat. It's classic R&B music. And because there is a saxophone solo in it, it kind of sounds like Mexican-American Springsteen anthem. Play 148. Now, all right, listen, I didn't want to like this song. I fucking love this song. I thought it was a little cheesy up front, but now I'm like, this, the only word I can use to describe this song is just lovely. Like, it's lovely. So here, sample lyrics. And I hope it's all it seems, not another empty dream. There's a time for you and me in a place living happily. Now, this is about an immigrant coming to America for a better life. And I don't think that could be more relevant than right now. In this story, the immigrant and his wife have a conversation about his impending journey to America and the promise of bringing the family once he can establish an opportunity for their new life. Yeah, but you could tell this was written in 1984 because if it was written during the Trump era, I think the lyrics would be a lot different. It'd be like, if we get detained at the border, just a matter of time. Sent to a concentration camp, just a matter of time.
It's so easy to listen to that song, though, too, because it's so, like, kind of chipper. Like, it is, you might get away with saying anything, you know? Like, we're going to get over that wall. Don't even worry. It's like, oh, okay. All right. Cool, man.
No, it's a completely positive. So, obviously, this, like I said, it's not what's going down now. But you were mentioning your family's journey to America. So, you said your parents were born here, and with all the parents before were born out of the country?
No, my mom's father was born on the Indian reservation in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, so which is right on the, like, you can literally see the fence from the reservation in Juarez, Mexico, is on the other side, which was, got a little crazy for a while. Now it's more chill with the cartel shit. Because we used to go over there as kids and, like, go shopping. And then it was like when the cartel shit started happening, we're like, no, we got to stay over here.
Is it that bad?
It was bad, dude. Yeah. And but now it's gotten better in the last, just there though. I mean, in Mexico, it's still a lot of shit going on. But then my dad's mom was also born here, but his father was born in Mexico, Zacatecas, Mexico. Yeah.
Did they have a difficult time coming here when they chose to?
Yeah. Like my grandfather tells me story, because I'll kind of try to dig in with him. But he's also like a positive guy. We call him a payaso, which is like a clown, because he's always joking. That's where they say I got it from. Even now, he's 91. Like, he takes like 5 naps a day, but he still gets up, and like when he's in the middle of a joke or storytelling, he gets up and y luego mama's aquí, and he like, and I'm like, damn, grandpa, hey, chill out, man. Like, you know. But he gets so into like telling a story.
I was like, did he have Parkinson's? Because that was very shaky. You were just like,
no, hang on. No, that's just him excited about a funny part in the story, but. But, yeah, he tells me the stories, you know, his name's Francisco, but he changed his name to Frank legally so he could try, you know, get a job, because it would, all those little things would help him, you know. And, he just worked in a factory, I mean, or not that just, but, you know, he got an opportunity and did his thing. But, yeah, he tells me some crazy stories. It was definitely tough for, you know, immigrants back then, especially, you don't speak English. And then, you know, eventually you learn how to speak English, you know, it wasn't perfect, but. It's like just hearing those challenges, I'm like, damn, they had to go up against so much.
All right, so now this next song is exactly what I was expecting from Los Lobos. Play the intro.
Yeah.
Dude, I fucking love this song, dude. You know what it is? Not only do I love this music, but I love the accordion. The Scottish have the bagpipe, the Americans have the guitar, and the Mexicans and Polish have the accordion. The accordion is the Mexican bagpipe. It's the fucking shit. I love this music so much. It's a simply structured musical poetic form developed in Mexico in the 1800s and was sung in common contemporary language. It became very popular along both sides of the border. Now, even though this song sounds so festive, because it does, it's just so much fun. You can't not move when you fucking hear this shit. It's really a song about regret and longing.
Yeah. And I love that they did it in English. This one's in English, right?
Well, yeah. Well,
this song actually, I guess, helped me get in touch with the fact, like, how close this is to, like, polka.
Polka.
Yeah. You know, like hearing Los Lobos sing a corrido in English, and then you hear the accordion, and I'm like, damn, it sounds pretty close to polka. And then it kind of just makes me question, like, dang, like, where's all the origins of this stuff, and who got where, and, you know, da da da. But Same with the, like my, well, my grandfather just turned 91, so we just had his birthday, and there's a genre of music called tamborazo, which is, it's popular where he's from in Zacatecas, which is all brass, one guy with a drum around his neck, straight up New Orleans style. You know what I mean? And then it's like, oh, dude, what the fuck? So, like, where is this originally from? Like, obviously, it came to New Orleans a certain way. It came to Mexico a certain way. Like, I don't know. So,
well, let me ask you this. What are the similarities between Mexicans and Americans?
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. It's tough for me to say. I have spent some time in Mexico, you know, but... and then just spending time with my grandfather, just seeing him, you know, half his life was in Mexico and then half his life has been here in America. I would think, I mean, there's definitely more opportunity here, I would say. And there's a big separation, though, in Mexico of, like, the class, you know. Like,
so the rich are extremely rich and the poor are extremely poor.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas here, you know, even though we have our stuck-up rich people, there are a lot of very affluent rich people who, you know, we all kind of mixed together, whether it be through a festival or just places to eat or whatever the fuck, you know, da da da. But in Mexico, it's like if you're a school teacher trying to go to like a club downtown, like they're not gonna let you in. And it's like, you know, and I've been in those situations where I had a friend who was a school teacher, lived in Mexico, and we're trying to go to a club, and we're like, you know, we're not even wearing that balling of stuff, but they could tell right away like who's American, who's not, and they'll be like, hey, we can't let this guy in, and I'm turning him what, and then he explains to me in Spanish, you know, like, hey, this is how it is down here. So I had to give the bouncer guy like an extra $40 or something. And he's all right, you know, pasale, you know, just like get him in. And I'm like, damn, that's messed up. Like, I don't even live here. This homie lives down the street and you can't let him in. And we were the same color, you know, like the same shade of brown. But they could just, you know, they could just tell. And I feel like, I don't know. I feel like there's more. I mean, now obviously it's changing with the whole administration we have. I feel like those kind of feelings are, you know, kind of coming into our turf now. And it used to just be like, nah, it's all good, like whatever, you know, as long as you're not about some bullshit.
But have you, since the Trump era, have you dealt with a lot more like hatred or anything like that? Have you had an instance where you really felt it?
Oh man, definitely.
Because you're traveling a lot too.
Oh yeah. Definitely a lot of, you know, I've had my times of discouragement and also times of encouragement, you know what I mean? And, you know, I did a show, you know, because it's only been within the last year and a half that clubs are giving my own weekends, you know, like headlining, you know, and I do myself and my characters live, and you know, and I do, you know, Creeper, it was a cholo, not everybody knows what a cholo is, and then I do Juanita Carmelita, who's, you know, a female character, so that's me, you know, I'm rocking wedges and lipstick and shit, and then so, you know, I'll go to like, you know, Indiana or whatever, and I'm like, fuck, man, and then I'll never forget this, it was a dude wearing a Trump shirt in the audience, and even my host, Rudy Ortiz, another Mexican, he came up to me and goes, hey, man, there's a guy wearing a Trump shirt out there. We thought he was there to, like, start shit.
Really?
yeah, but he ends up staying after for, like, the meet and greet. It was like, oh, man, you fucking funny as hell.
Man, you're funny as shit. Yeah. I thought you were going to be terrible. Yeah. Trump told me Mexicans are bad.
So it's like, fuck, man. It was kind of like, fuck you, but still, man, we found a common ground, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, funny's funny. And I mean, if you can, you know, what you're doing up there is hysterical, so... I'm just surprised. Like, he was probably sat down. He was like, oh, shit, this dude's a Mexican? All right, well, I shouldn't walk out yet. Wait, he's a funny one. He's one of the good ones. And then, what a dumb fuck.
Yeah.
What if you're, like, friends with him now and he hears man. This?
Well, I was nervous. Like, he was thinking, like, I'm making fun of my own people, you know, which is like, or like, oh, yeah, all Mexicans are. And, but he said some stuff to me at the end. I was like, oh, actually, fuck, you get it. He might not be a terrible person. You're just clueless on what the fuck's going on. You know, I don't know.
Most of those people that are racist, that's what they just have no idea.
Yeah, they're just clueless, man. Yeah. And it's like, sometimes you can't hold it against it, but also it's like, come on, man, get your shit together. But this whole Trump thing has definitely made me, just the hatred involved. I'm not saying every Trump supporter has, you know, is full of hate, but there's some hatred in his agenda for sure. And it's like, makes me relive the shit, you know? Like, I've been spit on, kicked out of places because of my race in California, and some white friends are surprised by that. Wait, no, but you live in California. Yeah, fuck, I know, all right? And it still happened, you know? It's just like, and it's still happening. And it's probably happening even more to, like, younger, you know...
Sure.
You know, minorities or whatever. But, yeah, just make me relive all those moments growing up where... You know, I was either removed, like asked to leave places or fucking kicked out of parties or fucking da da da, like trying to fit in with other groups, you know, and then just being like, nah, bro, this ain't for you, you know what I mean? And so, you know, I guess that's why I love comedy so much, because you could be like, fuck all that shit, you know, and then it's like, but yeah, man, it's a shame, man, the hate, and then And then, you know, my grandfather came back from serving in like Vietnam, and he was in uniform. Maybe he's like in, I think he was in like, I forget where he was, Kentucky or something. They're just going to a bar. He's with this guy, and he gets spit on because he's Native American. And I'm just like, gosh, damn. Like, you just came back from protecting.
Haven't they done enough to Native Americans? Let one of them have a fucking drink.
No, dude. And he was in uniform, bro. U.S. military uniform. Dedicated his whole life to the military.
He was like, what are you, Army? I only like Navies. Yeah. You're like, Jesus Christ.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget, and we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
All right, let's bring it to the next song.
Yeah, sorry.
I love this. Please. All right. Our Last Night. Now, this is where I really knew I liked the record. Also, I realized that the lead singer, David Hidalgo, could really sing. Play a little bit of it for me, Peter. I was fucking dancing my ass off to this. It just swings. It's just a fun song. And it, once again, you got this upbeat music, but it's another sad song.
Sad, dude.
Sad about an impending breakup where the music is just too happy to feel bad about it. Like, you don't even know that's what he's singing about. I loved this song. Your thoughts?
Yes, I loved it. I had to listen to it like a few times to be like, because I was like, oh, cool. And then I was thinking, oh, they're like on vacation on a trip together and they met each other out there, but they live in different parts. And then I started listening more. I'm like, no, they like been in a relationship, but they realize that it's not going to work out. Yeah. And this is it, man. And I was like, gosh, damn, just the layers in it, you know, because you don't really feel it until you listen to the words, because you're, you know, like you said, I was dancing to it too. I'm like, oh, this will feel good. I'm going to roll down the windows and light a joint. I'm cruising. I'm like, oh, shit, wait. This guy's about to get his heart broken.
They could have been singing like, syphilis. Yeah, yeah. It's on your dick. Yeah, yeah. But when you go to the doctor, you then find out you're really sick.
Oh, fuck.
Next song, The Breakdown. I didn't really like this one. I skipped this one after a few listens. Just here, it does have this really good sax solo in it, but there's this clapping. Here, just play 207 real quick. So I love a good sax solo, but that clapping in the background just sucks balls. Like, it's just terrible. All right, the next song, I Got Loaded. I really like this one. This is a cover of Camille Bob's 1965 single released by his band Little Bob and the Lollipops. What I love about this band, they have a sax player and they fucking use him. There is nothing better than a good sax solo. I'm telling you, I think every song on here has had one. So that's why now Los Lobos is my favorite band of all time. But this is a song about just getting fucked up, hence the title, I Got Loaded. Yeah. What's the wildest thing you ever did while loaded?
Oh, man. Oh, I don't even know, man. I need time to think about that one. But shit. I ran like kind of naked through a mall one time.
What?
Like I had basketball shorts.
How could you not? That you should have had that answer immediately.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've done some shit, man. But
explain the situation.
My friends, daring me to do it. We were doing some day drinking, and I had like these like basketball shorts on, and I took everything off but those, but I rolled them up into like a thong.
Yeah.
You know, basketball shorts, you can kind of roll them up.
Yeah.
Put them in the crack of my ass and all that. And then just kind of, at first I was just kind of like walking just like through the mall, and then they were just like, you know, my friend had this was back in like camcorder days, you know, the little thing, and they just filmed me walking through the mall, and then I started running, just filming people's reactions. I mean, I wasn't that crazy. Then from the running, I threw up outside after, not in the mall, but threw up in the parking lot.
How
but,
you great know, would that have
I was
been
like
if you threw
17,
up?
16, 17.
I didn't think
shit.
You were fucking 30, dude.
It's last week. I was at the Grove, and
I just like, how great would it have been if you would have had the rolled up basketball shorts thong and then you threw up like in the mall? That would have made it even better, man. You said you don't drink as much as you used to.
Oh, no.
Like do you drink? So you still drink or you quit?
No, I still drink. Yeah, for sure. It's a battle.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. You're one of my inspirations, actually.
to quit drinking?
I don't know if I can quit, you know, but I do like, I do take my breaks, but I always, you know, it's like when I feel my body tells me when, you know, and I'm like, oh, fuck. You know, da da da. All right, lay off this, lay off that. I'll take like a week off, you know, and sometimes it's tougher than others. Sometimes it's easy.
Yeah. Especially if there's things going on with friends and they're like, hey, we're going to this thing. And you're like,
man. Well, you know how it is being a comic in general. We're around it all the time. It's in our face all the time. It's just like.
There's like, well, first of all, let me ask you, any DUIs?
Yes, I got one.
You got one? Mm-hmm. I got three, dude. Step your game up.
Yeah, I got it dropped to a Wet and Reckless. So
a Wet and Reckless? Is that what it's called? It's my favorite porno movie. Wet and Reckless.
Wet and Reckless, volume 29.
Good for you, man. Like, there's nothing wrong with recognizing where you're at and being able to take a break. I always say this. You can do drugs, you can drink, but if it starts fucking with your money, you got to cut it loose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's it. And you're in a really, really good position right now. Like, dude, I only see you fucking going like that. So it's just, and if it's getting in the way of you creating, you know, and making you a worse artist than you are and taking away that special thing that you have, that's when, and if you can at least see that, you know what I mean? Like, that's so important because there's some people that are far talented than both of us that never saw that and, you know, don't have careers because of that
or are dead, you know what I mean? And I hate seeing that.
You're on the up. If the circle starts going down, that's when you take your break. You know what I mean? Dude, have fun for me, please, God, because I can't. I'm bored. I want to, God, I'm like, in the news, it's nonstop talk about fentanyl, and I'm like, oh, man, those were good days. But, they're like, no, Josh, but they're talking about all these overdoses and deaths. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, it was a lot of fun. Had a lot of fun. All right, speaking of fun and fentanyl, the next song is
Serenata Norteña.
Norteña. Yeah. And we're back with the mariachi shit. And in a shocker, Serenata Norteña translates to Northern Serenade. Yeah. I fucking loved this song. Like, we were talking about it earlier about how much I just like the vibe of it. I love the feeling as it comes to this mariachi, if that's what you call it, music. It's just so good. But what I love the most about this is when that goes from verse to the chorus, that shit just drops. And also that guy goes, ah, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I fucking love that. Play when that shit drops at 218.
Yeah, they slow it down like that.
Ugh. Yeah, dude. Dude, they fucking slow it down, and I mean, that is a fucking, like, a drop.
Dude, I love this song, though, because, you know, and still how it is in some parts of Mexico, especially, like, the smaller villages that don't, you know, like, where, you know, social media and this and that is, like, a thing, is, like, even my grandfather would tell me stories, like, when you liked a girl, you would wait till the night falls, and you would have to hire, like, band members to go serenade the girl, and a lot of times, the guy would go ask the father permission first to give him a heads up, like, hey, I'm going to come through tonight. and then, you know, the father would approve it, and then they would, you come with these, like, you know, three or four band members, and then you start serenading the girl from outside her home. And then if she turns on her light, that means it's yes. If she leaves the light off,
you're fucked.
That means nah, homie. You gotta work on your skills, or she just
maybe the light's ugly. Broken. Yeah, yeah. Nah, man, they poured. The light's broken. Trust me, I'm gonna keep singing. Hello, La Santa, bitch. Is that nothing?
Go give her a candle just in case.
She's got the lighter out like it's at a concert. Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. No, that's incredible. I had no idea about that.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy, right? So, kind of reminded me of that.
The next song on the record is Evangeline. Now, this is a swinging, upbeat boogie about a young Chicana girl who runs away from home to find something more. In 2012, this song and many others from the Los Lobos songbook were used to create a multimedia stage musical called Evangeline, the Queen of Make-Believe, that actually ran at the Bootleg Theater here in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and I see why they did this and they named it after this, because this song is fucking great. Play a little bit of it for me, Peter.
Don't know where she is or where she's going.
So the story, Evangeline is a youthful Chicano growing up in the late 60s, mostly an optimistic, albeit naive teenage girl who leaves home in search for her American dream. Evangeline is on the roam, just barely 17 when she left home. Don't know where she is or where she's going. She's the queen of make-believe, Evangeline. No, that's great, because I think that's kind of what we're all trying to do, is we're all in search of our American dream. Mm-hmm. What is the stupidest thing you ever did as a teenager?
Ah, shit, man. I don't know. I guess, I try to be a cholo. I guess it's probably the stupidest thing I did, because I got my ass beat.
Tell me about it.
I was like trying to, you know, I was in a, you know, like a lot of us go through identity crisis kind of thing. I was like 12, 13, and all my cousins were like cholos, you know, they're like gang members and shit. And so, you know, after school, I go to my grandma and grandpa's house every day. That's where we would all hang out, including my other cousins who were just maybe a couple years older than me or 2-3 years older than me. So, you know, I'm 12, they're like 15. And, you know, I want to be down with them. I want to hang out. And then so I'm like trying to dress up like them, and then my mom's like, you ain't dressing like that. My dad's like, nah, because my dad's old school cholo, you know. He's like, nah, let him, you know, but if he's gonna do it, he's gonna do it right. And then so my dad would wake me up at like 5 a.m. He would make me crease my dickies, like starch them, crease my shirt, my white tee, starch them, tuck it in, you know. He, you know, like be all like, and he's like, all right, you want to do it, then go out there and do it, you know, you want to rep the shit. I would say it was like about a month in, and these two dudes hit me up, and I was like, yeah, you know, I was trying to claim the same gang my cousins were from and all that shit. And, you know, and they slammed my head against a metal door, and I got I still got a dent in my skull right here, and I got 12 staples in my head right here. I don't know if you can see it.
I got a dent in my skull, too, back here. Fuck yeah, we're the Dented Skull Boys.
Yeah, yeah.
The brothers. We got Dent Skull Brothers.
So, yeah, so after that happened, I was like, yeah, you know what?
Let's go back to just being Frankie. Yeah,
Bugle Boy shorts and cargo jeans.
Like, I don't have to be called the Rooster anymore. I don't need a nickname.
But I'll probably say that was a great learning experience, and I'm glad that I'm almost grateful that it happened, because it could have been worse, you know. And then
oh yeah, let's say that never happens, and you actually get into the gang, and or you just go keep trying to fit in, and you're in that life.
My cousins were always involved in that, still kind of are, but even they were always kind of like, this ain't for you, homie, you know, like there's something better for you out there. They would always tell me, stick to the books, all right, because they saw that my mom and dad were like working hard to put me on a different path, even though they would beat my ass themselves sometimes. Like, I appreciated it, but I was like, you know, I think it put me in the right direction, but also I guess doing that stupid thing Help me isn't get my fun- head straight.
Yeah, but isn't it funny that one of your most popular characters
is that?
And it's like, yeah. So you do, in a sense, get to live that out still.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot safer and a lot more money than probably the other motherfuckers are making.
Well, maybe that's some of them, but it's a, and Creeper's like, he's a fitness instructor, you know, so he's positive. And
yeah,
it's straight up like my dad, man. My dad is like, he's when he had kids, it's what like totally changed. But he was always like in a lowrider car club. Like my Nino, my godfather, his best friend, was like president of lowrider car club for like 30 years. So I was, you know, being at lowrider car shows, like you see rival gang members sharing the same space, but they would leave the drama outside of that because it's all about the cars, you know. So you see that, like, wow, it's just like having something positive to focus on could change the whole vibe, you know. So it's like, they even talk about it. It's like, they're like, oh, yeah, check out my ride. All right, see you later. Well, hopefully I don't see you later because then we'll have to fight. But right now, just like, hey.
All right, next song, I Got to Let You Know. Really fun song. I did love the tempo of this. Play the intro real quick. What I heard from this was it sounded like a sped up version of something from the Coasters from the 1960s, just like an older band, right. But with a little bit of like Latin flavor and some of the Zydeco accordion that I love so much. Lyrically, it's pretty much just an I Love You Baby song. Not much as far as depth. So that brings us then to one of the oddest songs that I think is on this record, Lil King of Everything. It's very old timey and just like the only way to explain it is renaissance-y. Play the intro, Peter. What was the Renaissance like in Mexico?
Like, dude, I have no
come
idea.
Come hither, Enrique, and see this clay sculpture.
Some horchata, Enrique.
Forsooth, Rodrigo, nary shall your wench's guacamole be outdoneth. Like, it just didn't feel like it should be on this record. And like, it's... Listen, I'm not saying I didn't like the song. It's a great song. It just out of all the shit we've been going through for the first... the first nine songs prior just didn't fit with the record. Now we've come to the title track of the album, Will the Wolf Survive? Not only is it the title track, like I just said, but it's also the last song on the record. Not my favorite, good song, mm-hmm. but I don't know if this is the way I wanted the album to end. Peter, play 243 for me.
It's the truth that they are looking for.
Actually, I want to take that back. I like this song. I do like it a lot. It's good, man. I can't shit on it. It's fucking good. Like it really is. It's like a fun song. It sounds a little dated, but I still feel like it's, you know, it's a strong, strong song.
Yeah, yeah. I like it. It feels familiar to me, you know, like
yes.
Other songs. Yeah.
It sounds like it should be in like a montage of some guys like hiking.
Yeah, yeah. Or like a family in a station wagon going camping in that windy road, like.
Well, the world's and they're passing like snacks, but eating Cheez-Its and shit. So the inspiration for this song as well as the title of the album was a National Geographic article titled Where Can the Wolf Survive? Oh. It paralleled the band's struggles to find musical acceptance. According to drummer Louis Perez, it was like our group, our story. What is the beast? This animal that the record companies can't figure out. Will we be given the opportunity to make it or not? Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, you figure these guys, like, they struggled. From what I did some reading prior to this about them, and they struggled. Like, they made their first record, which they made enough money off their first record to buy a van and tour, and that's where they constructed this. So they wrote this while they're in that van. So that's how I see it. Now even hearing that story and listening to the song and seeing like the title of it, mm-hmm. like it just makes me appreciate this band even more and appreciate this song. Do you feel like you're accepted in your career?
I mean, yeah, I would say, I mean, there's always like, you know, the two sides, you know, and then even for my own community, Latino community, you know, I get people that are like, oh, you know, he's feeding into this is a bad look for us or da da da. But it's like, come on, man. That gets a little frustrating for me, especially in the beginning, you know, when you're like barely working your way up and nobody knows who you are, da da da. Like, you know, nobody's saying anything about it. But all of a sudden it gets big, and obviously, you know, people say some negative stuff and it hurts, but it's also like I've learned to like just focus on the positive because 99% of the feedback is good because it's relatable or, you know, Creeper's like the most popular. But I love doing Creeper because it's so nostalgic for me, you know, and like I'm doing a piece of my dad, my godfather, my cousins, like the things I grew up around. So I'm like, hell yeah. So when I see people connect with that, I'm like, you know, and he's not like too over the top and he's a positive dude. So it's like, all right, cool.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from niche music podcasts that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
What was the first moment? Was when Creeper dropped? Was that the first moment that you felt accepted?
I mean, I still sometimes I feel not accepted, you know, so like now, you know, so it's like, I don't know if that's ever going to end, you know, I would say once I was able to just make a living and do shows and start touring and, you know.
Is that when you felt like you accepted it, that you're actually like, no, I'm a part of this machine?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was like, no, I'm not going to change anything because this and that, like, if it offends some people, it offends some people. That's just the way it is. I mean, and comedy nowadays, especially in the world we're living in today, is like everything's kind of like, you know, like, oh, shit, don't say that or don't say this. So me doing a cholo character, like based off whatever, even my female character, Juanita Carmelita, is like, dude, these are just characters, these are just jokes, and there's just a reflection of my family and things I grew up around. So it's like, if you can't see that, then, you know, you just keep it moving.
You want to do some facts and then we'll get out of here?
Sure,
do some facts. Yeah. With the facts, will the facts survive? In 1980, former Sex Pistol Johnny Lydon's new band, Public Image Limited, which we actually just broke that down with Kyle Kinane. It was a terrible record. In 1980, former Sex Pistol Johnny Lydon's new band, PIL, were to play a show at the Grand Olympic Auditorium in downtown L.A. with several opening bands. When the band, the 45s, dropped out, Los Lobos filled in unannounced. One attendant was music journalist Chris Morris, future author of the only story of the band in print, Los Lobos, Blue and Dream. His plus one that night was future producer and Los Lobos member Steve Berlin. Oh, fuck yeah, dude. Good for them.
Whoa.
Chris recalled that the band were still mostly unknown East LA acoustic folk act, and they were then pelted by beer and other things by their first punk rock audience. They lasted about 9 minutes on stage.
Oh, my God. That is fucking insane to think about.
Yeah, just getting. I mean, I once was at a rave doing stand up comedy. And people started throwing glow sticks and beer at me, which was fine because the glow sticks were cool. The beer, like, because you could see the glow stick coming, but the beer would. You never saw that one. What's the worst show you ever played?
Oh gosh, it was a comedy club in Pleasanton, California. Tommy T's and
I've heard of that. Yeah, wild.
It was a Sunday show. The headliner that was there the whole weekend had a disagreement with the owner of the club on the Saturday night after the second show. So he was supposed to close the one last show, but he left. You know, he got in an argument. So they filled in with like a showcase. And it was this dude's birthday from East Oakland. And, you know, he got this gator skin shoes doing it up. seemed like a really cool dude, but the whole crowd was packed. I mean, and they were an East Oakland hood crowd, and hey, I started it up in the Bay, so yeah, I was confident, you know, because I started in a lot of, you know,
it's your area,
Latino
it's
rooms.
Your,
I started a lot of black rooms. I did rooms in like Richmond where it's just all black hood crowd, and like that's how I started. So I was like, all right, I got this, and then they did this showcase, and right when I got there, the host Sugar Shay, she was like, "Oh baby, you know they're being rough and da da da." And I was like, "But I was still like, I got this."
Oh, you know? Chill out, Sugar Shay. Like, I got you, girl. It was Sugar like, Shay. I love that name.
I was like a few years in, or I think maybe 3 or 4 years in. So I was kind of still like, "Oh man, yeah, I'm killing it."
I'll get them.
And I go back to the bar and order a drink. She's like, "Yeah, they're sending drinks back." Da da da. And I was like, "Nah, I got this." You know, the show looked like it was going okay. And then I went up and I had him for like the first 10 minutes. And I used to do this bit back in the day, you know, and I stopped.
What was it about?
It was like about a gay gangster hip hop group. I'm like, what are those? Like a gay gangster hip hop group. But they were like dope and people were feeling them. And I had like 4 members and I had verses written out for each one and voices for each one. It's so stupid. But I would do them in these rooms, man. And a lot of times they would hit, but it was like all Latino or all black rooms, you know, with you know, they get homophobic or it's a very risky joke. And sure enough, man, I did this joke. This crowd was not feeling it. I mean, they like crossed the arms, turned on me. And after that, like I couldn't get him back, man. I turned into a robot just trying to get through my jokes. This dude stood up out of his chair, stood up. And he's like, "Motherfucker, you ain't funny." And then just sits back down. And I'm just like, okay. And then I just go to the next joke. And then these 2 nice looking black women up front, they look like they were just sweet. Like, you know, cook a nice meal for you or whatever. They're sitting up front and out loud so everybody could hear because it was that quiet. You know, they're like, "Oh, baby, you look scared. You look scared." And I'm just like, yeah, okay, next joke. Go to the thing. Dude, I was dying inside, man. Then I had the nerve to hang out after the show.
Oh.
Dude comes up to me, my boy G King standing next to me. And this dude comes up. He's like, tells G King, "You should have stayed up there." Dude looks at me, he goes, "Practice. Practice." And then just walks away. And I was like, "All right, thanks, man. Thanks for coming out." And just like, oh, dude. It was like rough for me to get on stage for like the next month. You know, I called every veteran I knew. I'm like, "Here's what happened." They're like, "Hey, man, it's got to happen. It has to happen.
No, that's the best advice. Because, I mean, I would have quit in the first year because I had bad experiences where I would turn an audience off or it would just be awkwardly quiet. And I was scared. But that's the thing is that like it's those shows that just anytime you take a loss like that, as long as you learn from it. So now you know, it's like, all right, well, if I'm doing another, like, all-black room or just, like, there's a lot of guys, like, do not do that joke, you know? But, I mean, at the same time, fuck them. Like, you should be able to do that joke. Joke's fucking funny.
Yeah. I mean, there's times that I did it, but I appreciate those rooms like that, too, you know? It's just, like, the honesty, you know? Like, nah, okay, that was funny. Okay, it's like, all right, cool, you know? It's just like. But I love that shit, man. But I would say I take a piece of that set with me on stage every time.
Good.
It's a extra muscle.
Good. You know, you're a stronger person. You're a better comic for it. So fuck yeah. What's up, Sugar Shay? All right. And now, this fact is fucking insane. In 1986, at the urging of their shared record label, Warner Brothers, Los Lobos entered a studio to help Paul Simon work on his new album. After a fruitless first day, the band played Simon a new instrumental track from their next album. He took a liking to it, and they recorded it. However, when the record came out, it listed Paul Simon as the sole composer of the track, "All Around the World" or "Myth of the Fingerprints." The record was the award-winning Graceland, and it sold 14 to 16 million records to date. This is where I think this is fucked. When the band contacted Paul Simon about getting a co-writing credit and share of the money, he told them, and I quote, "Try and sue me."
Oh.
Play the song real quick. Play the song, because let's hear "All Around the World" in the "Myth of the Fingerprints." I mean, that sounds exactly like 3 tracks off this record.
Right.
Dude, fuck Paul Simon.
Fucking Paul Simon, man. You
what
fuck.
A dick, dude. Understandably, the band thinks he's an asshole. You ever get ripped off?
Jesus. I mean, you know, I've had, yeah, you know, I've had people tell me, or even the video thing, especially with like Creeper and stuff like that. I've had some, you know, some videos.
My character's Creeper.
Little peeper. I peep over walls and it gets a workout like that.
It doesn't even have to be comedy wise. Have you ever been ripped off in your life?
Oh, you mean like robbed?
It
like,
could be anything, yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude. I've had my apartment robbed. I've had fucking car broken into, like shit like that, yeah.
What was the word? What's one stunt?
I've been robbed like a dude with a gun. He didn't point it at me, but he showed it to me, you know, and then. But I would say getting my apartment robbed, man, was fucking.
When was that?
It was fucked up. Maybe like 2005. I mean, they just like cleaned me out. And it was just like everything, even like my little, I had like these clippers I used to shave my balls with and everything. They even took that. I'm like, fuck, man.
Dick trimmer?
Yeah.
They took my dick trimmer, bro.
They took your dick trimmer?
What the fuck?
Dude, those are some good robbers.
Yeah. But you know, there was a minute when they were like throwing shit in the bag. They were like, yo, should I get his ball clippers?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you know there was ball clippers? It could be his face clippers. Motherfucker, we know when the ball clippers. Look at that hair right there. That's all curly Q. Looks like it's from fucking Abe Vigoda's head. All right. Final thoughts on the record.
Oh, man. Love it. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a few tracks on there I'm probably not going to listen to again. But overall, I love it because I just love how they show their versatility on it, and they weren't afraid to commit, you know, because like when you talk about the struggles they had in becoming who they are, like I can totally see that. I felt that as a listener, you know, when I'm like, oh, we got to buy their album. And I'm like, what's all this other polka shit they got going on here? Yeah. This bluesy folk stuff. But then after you listen to it and then you start embracing their voice, you're like, oh, shit. Okay. These guys are just dope as fuck, you know? And now, also, I'm like, fuck Paul Simon, man, damn.
Yeah, fuck Paul Simon.
I hope he made it right.
If you take any takeaway facts from this record and feelings, it's fuck Paul Simon. Frankie, I love watching the shit that you're doing, and I love watching your eyes, man. You're so funny, and I can't thank you enough for coming on, brother.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me, man. Much continued success and much love, baby.
I really enjoyed that conversation with Frankie. Really enjoyed that, guys. I hope you guys did, too. For all things Frankie Quinones, go to his website, frankiequinones.com, and check out his social media, at Frankie Quinones, where you can see all the incredible funny videos that guy posts. Also, I'm going to be posting Frankie's Spotify mixtape on our website and on Soch, and you can find all things 500 at our website, the500podcast.com. Email me at 500podcast@gmail.com. Tell me if you think this episode was awesome. If you think it sucked, still email us. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media, and all tickets you can find at joshadammyers.com. Please subscribe on Spotify or your favorite platform, but subscribe on Spotify. And if you are listening to this on Apple, boo, leave a review. Boo, leave a review. Don't forget to follow my staff at Avery Funny, at DJ Morty Coyle, at JT Podcast Exec, at Badass Wizard, at Real Matt Pinfield. Now, we just listened to Los Lobos from 1984. For new music this week, our music director Matt Pinfield selected Goodbye June. Goodbye June are a three-piece band from Nashville who were inspired by Americana influences like the Black Crowes and Los Lobos. The band is touring Europe right now, where they have built a strong following after the last few tours. Listen to their track Anywhere the Wind Blows on Spotify and check out the link on our website, the500podcast.com. We're going to get you to come to the website. One way or another, you getting there. And if you're in a band and were directly influenced by one of these albums or artists and you want your music featured on the 500 website, send your song to 500podcast@gmail.com. Make sure you put the album and the artist that influenced you in the subject line. And if you guys are in a band and you want your song played on the 500, send us that with the release saying that we can play your song. And we will play a little bit of it and post it on our website because I want to launch bands.
This is for all of y'all. If you're out there and you want to get heard, I am here to help. Send us your music. Let's launch some careers. Next week is Alice Cooper week with his 1971 album, Love It to Death. So you got some homework to do. Listen to the album on Spotify. Stay fleecy.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
Next Chapter Podcasts.